You know that feeling when you finally track down that incredibly specific, perfectly niche item you've been hunting for online?
Oh, yeah. That little rush when you finally find it.
Right, you click buy on some international e-commerce store, you get that hit of dopamine, and then, the waiting begins.
The endless tracking page refreshes.
Yes, you start refreshing it every single day. You
Yeah.
watch the little package icon move from a warehouse to a sorting facility to an airport.
But then it hits the wall.
Exactly. Right before it gets to your doorstep, it has to cross this invisible, incredibly high-stakes checkpoint customs clearance.
Which is where so many packages just go to die.
It really is.
That is.
And what most consumers, and honestly, shockingly, a lot of sellers don't realize is that the entire fate of that package hinges on one thing.
One single data point.
Yeah. Whether it sails through or gets locked up in a warehouse indefinitely is almost entirely based on the declared value.
It operates as the absolute bottleneck of global trade. I mean, long before a physical box ever reaches a border, the data for that declared value is already transmitted into massive government
It's
databases.
all digital now.
Completely digital. That one number dictates the algorithmic risk assessment, the tax burden, and ultimately whether a human agent is going to actually pull that box off the conveyor belt.
Which brings us to the mission of our deep dive today. We are decoding a definitive guide from ClickShip on accurate declared values for e-commerce shipping.
A very crucial topic right now.
Definitely. We're going to explore what customs authorities are actually searching for when they scan those databases, why incredibly smart e-commerce sellers constantly get the math wrong, and how the global rules of the game just underwent a massive change.
A change that impacts literally anyone buying or selling online today.
Absolutely. But before we get into the weeds, we need to set the stage.
Right. To set a proper foundation for this, we have to completely rethink what a shipping label actually is.
Because most people just think it's a sticker, right?
Exactly. They view it as just a delivery sticker, like a barcode to help the mail carrier find your porch. But a shipping label is actually a legally binding declaration.
Wow, okay. Legally binding.
Yeah. When an e-commerce seller generates that label, they are officially submitting documentation to federal authorities. Customs agencies, carriers, logistics brokers, they all rely completely on that data to assess national security and economic impact.
That is a lot of weight for a little thermal sticker.
It is. And because of the heavy legal weight of this process, I do need to clarify that our deep dive today is strictly for general informational purposes.
Right, it's not legal advice.
No, not legal, tax, or customs advice. The regulatory landscape shifts constantly, so sellers really must always verify these requirements with appropriate authorities or trade professionals before they put anything on a plane.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand why packages get delayed, we first have to define what value actually means to a customs agent.
Which is almost never what you think it means.
Right. Reading through this ClickShip guide, it becomes painfully obvious that what customs considers value is rarely what the seller assumes it is.
It's a completely different language.
I look at this a bit like declaring income to the IRS. You can't just, make up a number that feels right or it reflects your personal feelings about your bank account.
No, the IRS would not love that.
Exactly. You have to use the objective, documented numbers. But I want to push back on one of the examples from the source material because this is where I think sellers genuinely get confused.
Okay, lay it on me.
Let's say I manufacture a really nice custom ceramic coffee mug. It costs me exactly $25 in raw materials, kiln time, and labor to make this mug.
So $25 is your internal cost.
Right. Then I put it on my website, and a customer in another country buys it for $80.
A nice markup.
Yeah, good business. But from my perspective as the creator, the physical item inside that cardboard box is a $25 piece of ceramic.
I see where you're going with this.
Why can't I just declare my $25 internal cost on the customs form? I mean, I'm saving my buyer some money on import duties. And $25 is technically the objective worth of the physical materials.
What's fascinating here is how universal that exact misunderstanding is. I mean, sellers look at the physical materials in the box, but customs authorities are looking at the economic event that caused the box to move.
The economic event.
Yes. What you're describing is your internal cost of goods sold. But customs operates on a totally different metric called transaction value.
Okay, transaction value.
Right. The World Customs Organization, which basically sets the foundational standards for how international borders operate, dictates that transaction value is the primary basis for customs value.
Meaning the actual sale price.
Exactly. The European Commission defines this mechanism incredibly clearly. It is the price actually paid or payable when goods are sold for export.
So the markup has to be included.
Yes. In your coffee mug example, the economic event that triggered the border crossing wasn't you spending $25 on clay and electricity.
It was the buyer.
Right. It was a buyer in another country spending $80 to acquire the finished good. The Canada Border Service Agency, or CBSA, echoes this requirement perfectly in the source material, too.
They don't leave much wiggle room, do they?
None at all. They state that the value for duty is the base figure used to calculate duty on imported goods, and it absolutely must reflect the transaction. So that $80 retail price is the only legally defensible starting point.
That completely reframes the entire concept. It's less about taxing an object and more about taxing a commercial transaction.
Precisely. They are taxing the movement of wealth.
Customs isn't taxing the clay. They're taxing the wealth transfer. So when a seller decides to declare the $25 manufacturing cost instead of the $80 selling price, they aren't being clever.
No, they are committing textbook undervaluation.
They're declaring a value lower than the true transactional value of the goods. And the guide points out that this is a massive compliance violation that triggers audits.
It triggers audits because the data doesn't match the reality of the global market. Customs algorithms are literally designed to spot those exact discrepancies.
But wait, if the golden rule is declare what the buyer actually paid, sellers often find themselves paralyzed when the buyer theoretically pays nothing.
Oh, the $0 dilemma.
Yes, which leads us directly into a massive gray area. Let's take that same $80 mug. The customer receives it, but the handle chipped during transit.
Happens all the time.
Right. I want to provide good customer service, so I send them a warranty replacement. Or maybe I run a promotion where I toss in a free sample of a new coaster with their order.
Okay, standard e-commerce practices.
But the customer literally paid $0 for that specific secondary shipment.
Right. The money already changed hands last week.
Exactly. My instinct as a business owner is to put $0 or maybe $1 on the customs form. The transaction value on that day was zero. So why is putting $1 on a replacement item considered undervaluation?
Because entering $0 or $1 is basically the equivalent of daring a customs agent to pull your package off the line.
Daring them?
Yeah. An item crossing a border always has intrinsic value, regardless of whether money changed hands at that exact second. A free good still requires a supportable customs value and a highly specific reason for export.
Because it's still a physical asset.
Exactly. You are moving a physical asset from one economy to another. The border agency needs to account for that asset.
So you can't just say it's worthless.
You cannot tell customs a finished product has no value because the mere fact that you are paying international shipping rates to move it proves it has value.
Wow, that makes total sense when you put it like that.
And the CBSA explicitly states that a value for duty is required even for goods received completely free of charge. That covers warranty replacements, promotional samples, and it explicitly covers gifts.
A gift still has a market value. Like, yep. If my aunt sends me a sweater, she didn't sell it to me, but she bought it for $50.
Right. The asset moving across the border is worth $50.
The ClickShip Guide dives into this psychology of undervaluation, too. Sellers fall into these traps all the time, often driven by just wanting to provide good customer service.
Yeah, they want to be the good guy. A very common scenario is marking a standard paid e-commerce sale as a gift.
Oh, I see this everywhere.
A buyer will message the seller after checkout and ask them to mark the package as a gift so they don't get hit with import taxes when the delivery driver shows up.
You literally see that advice constantly on consumer forums like Reddit. People genuinely think it's just a polite favor a seller can do for them.
Well, doing that favor is a direct violation of international trade law.
Not so polite anymore.
No. The guide is uncompromising on this. Lowering the value or changing the classification just because the buyer asks you to is fraudulent.
It creates severe risk for the seller.
Massive risk. If customs inspects that package and finds a packing slip for a commercial sale inside a box marked gift, they will seize the goods.
And then everyone loses.
The seller loses the inventory, the buyer doesn't get their item, and the seller's shipping account gets flagged for future scrutiny.
But the discount scenario is another place where this gets tricky. Let's say it's Black Friday. That $80 mug is on a legitimate site-wide sale for $50.
Okay, a real discount.
The customer actually pays $50. Does the seller declare the $80 standard price or the $50 the customer actually swiped their credit card for?
If a valid discount code or site-wide promotion was used at the exact time of purchase, the seller declares the $50.
Okay, so that is allowed.
Yes, because that is the true transaction value for that specific economic event.
But there's a catch, right?
Always. The crucial mechanism here is the paper trail. The seller must maintain the order records showing that promotion. The documented transaction value on the commercial invoice has to transparently show the original price, the applied discount, and the final paid value.
So what does this all mean? Getting the actual number right is just the opening move.
Just the beginning.
Right. Once you establish the correct numerical value, the entire game shifts to how that number is supported across multiple platforms. A perfectly calculated $50 valuation is entirely useless if the words and the documents surrounding it don't match up.
It's all about consistency.
It's like a high-stakes matching game, but the customs agents aren't the ones playing it. Their automated systems are.
The algorithms are ruthless.
Yeah. If the commercial invoice attached to the box says $50, but the digital payment gateway record says $80, the system triggers an automatic mismatch.
And your box goes into a literal metal cage at the airport.
Just sitting there until a human investigator can figure out which document is lying.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, customs authorities are processing millions of packages daily. Their systems simply do not have the bandwidth for ambiguity. Discrepancies in paperwork force those automated systems to halt the clearance process entirely.
What blows my mind in the ClickShip guide is how a single, seemingly harmless word can trigger that system halt. They call it the vague word trap.
Oh, the vague word trap is a nightmare.
Right. Picture this. A seller is packing 50 orders on a Tuesday afternoon. They are in a hurry, and they just type merchandise or accessories in the product description field.
Just trying to get it out the door.
Exactly. To the seller, that adequately describes the box full of stuff. But to a customs algorithm, the word merchandise is a void.
It means absolutely nothing.
It could be a cotton t-shirt, it could be heavily regulated lithium-ion batteries, or it could be restricted agricultural seeds.
Merchandise operates as a broad category, not a specific description. Custom systems are basically programmed to flag those vague categories for human review because they cannot verify the tariff classification.
So using those vague words increases your clearance risk exponentially.
Off the chart.
If the seller just takes 2 extra seconds to type cotton men's t-shirt or stainless steel water bottle, the automated system can easily verify the product, match it to the declared value, and clear the package while it's still in the air.
The granularity required on these documents is totally non-negotiable. For cross-border e-commerce shipments, the commercial invoice must include a highly specific set of elements to survive the scrutiny.
What are the absolute essentials?
The guide details them: complete seller and buyer contact information, those precise product descriptions we just talked about, the exact quantity, the unit value, the total value, the specific currency used in the transaction.
Currency is huge. Don't mix up US and Canadian dollars.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, the country of origin where the item was actually manufactured and the explicit reason for export, such as a commercial sale, a warranty return, or a promotional sample.
There's also a heavy emphasis on HS codes in the source material.
Harmonized system codes are fundamental to this process. Think of an HS code as the Dewey Decimal System for global trade.
I love that comparison.
It is a universal language of numbers that tells any customs agent on Earth exactly what the item is, regardless of the local language printed on the box.
So a 9-digit number tells them it's a cotton shirt.
Exactly. Providing the accurate HS code alongside those specific descriptions allows the automated systems to instantly calculate the correct duty rates. And furthermore, if there are shipping, insurance, or packing charges bundled into the price, those must be itemized clearly on the invoice.
I can hear small business owners groaning right now.
It sounds like a lot of work.
Contextualizing this for, you know, a solo entrepreneur running a Shopify store out of their garage, it sounds like an agonizing amount of administrative overhead just to mail a sweater to Canada.
It really does.
But it's not ClickShip giving friendly best practice advice. It's federal law.
Yes, it is the law.
You look at U.S. customs regulations, specifically 19 CFR 141.86. That statute legally mandates every single one of those fields.
We don't mess around.
It demands the merchandise description, the quantities, the purchase price, and the exact currency, the itemized charges. and the country of origin.
Hmm.
A small business owner isn't just doing paperwork. They are fulfilling a federal legal requirement every time they print a label.
The legal framework is rigorous, precisely because the potential for fraud is so vast. The guide cites a critical warning from UPS regarding their customs valuation checklist. Deliberate manipulation of this data is heavily penalized.
What kind of manipulation?
Well, one of the most common tactics mentioned is splitting shipments.
Oh, breaking up a big order.
Exactly. A buyer purchases $1,000 worth of goods, which would normally trigger import duties. The seller decides to split that single order into two separate $500 boxes, shipping them on different days to artificially stay under a tax threshold.
They think they're flying under the radar by breaking up the invoice. But the algorithms are designed to catch exactly that, right?
The customs systems cross-reference buyer names, addresses, and payment records. When they detect a split shipment designed to circumvent duty thresholds, it is treated as a deliberate evasion of customs laws.
And then you're in real trouble.
The carriers and the authorities will penalize the seller. The core principle remains the documented purchase price on the customs declaration must perfectly match the verifiable proof of payment.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've laid out the strict rules, the exact definitions of transaction value, and the intense, legally mandated documentation required.
All the fun stuff.
But a listener might be wondering why there is an entire, highly detailed guide dedicated to this right now. Why is getting the numbers perfect suddenly an urgent existential crisis for e-commerce sellers?
Because the ground just shifted beneath their feet.
Exactly. The answer lies in a massive, fundamental shift in U.S. border policy that the source material brings into sharp focus. It all centers around a pivotal date, August 29, 2025.
This raises such an important question about the sheer volume of global trade and how governments manage it. That specific date effectively rewrote the operational playbook for international e-commerce.
Break the mechanics of this down for us. On August 29, 2025, the U.S. suspended duty-free treatment for low-value shipments valued at or under $800 from all countries.
Massive change.
How does the removal of that specific rule radically amplify the risks for the everyday seller who is just trying to ship out small, inexpensive items?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to look at the historical context of the de minimis rule.
The $800 limit.
Right. For years, the U.S. allowed packages valued under $800 to enter the country duty-free, with minimal customs friction. The original intent was to save customs agents from wasting hours processing paperwork for a $20 souvenir.
Which makes sense, practically.
It did, but the explosion of global e-commerce platforms weaponized that rule. Millions of packages flooded the border every single day, completely legally, bypassing intense scrutiny because they were declared under that $800 threshold.
It was like a fast pass lane.
Exactly. It allowed massive volumes of inventory to move seamlessly. By suspending that duty-free treatment, the buffer is gone.
The invisible shield protecting all those small packages just evaporated overnight.
Precisely. Now, the mechanical reality at the border has completely changed. Every single package, whether it's a $700 piece of electronics or a $15 silicone phone case, is subjected to the exact same rigorous scrutiny as a commercial freight shipment.
That is wild.
The World Customs Organization has explicitly noted that cross-border e-commerce creates immense valuation challenges for duty and tax collection. Without the de minimis buffer, authorities are now actively auditing the declared values, the product descriptions, and the supporting digital records of millions of micropackages that previously would have just sailed through on a conveyor belt.
The sheer mechanical nightmare of that is staggering. If a shipment looks even slightly undervalued now, or if a seller uses the word accessories on a $15 item, the consequences aren't just a minor delay. The whole system halts.
The outcomes cascade very quickly. If the automated system, a logistics broker, or a human customs agent identifies a valuation discrepancy, the seller is suddenly required to produce the original digital proof of payment, commercial invoices, and live product listings to justify the declared value.
Just to prove a $15 item is actually $15.
Yeah. And while the seller is frantically digging up those digital records, the physical package is moved into a customs hold facility. That creates severe clearance delays.
And it costs money, right?
Oh, absolutely. Then the financial penalties begin to accrue daily storage charges at the facility or steep brokerage fees to have someone manually file the corrections.
It just keeps adding up.
In worst case scenarios, if the documentation isn't provided fast enough, the package is returned to the sender at their expense. The authorities can levy direct financial penalties, and the carrier can ultimately suspend the seller's shipping account.
A suspended shipping account means a total operational freeze for an e-commerce business.
You're dead in the water.
You literally cannot fulfill your global orders. The carrier guidelines make it fiercely clear where the liability lands. The customer of the carrier, meaning the e-commerce seller, who generated the label, is entirely legally responsible for the authenticity, accuracy, and completeness of the shipment information.
No passing the buck.
Right. A seller cannot blame their e-commerce platform for a glitch, and they cannot blame the carrier for a delay.
The liability is entirely on the entity that makes the declaration.
It really changes how you view that little thermal label printer sitting on your desk. It's not just spitting out routing information so a truck knows where to go. It's spitting out federal compliance documents that dictate the survival of your business.
It's a serious piece of hardware now.
Looking at the ClickShip checklist provided in this guide.
Whoa.
Confirming the precise order type, checking the actual price paid versus the manufacturing cost, ensuring descriptions are granular rather than vague, perfectly matching your internal records to the public invoice.
It's a lot to manage.
It is so easy for a busy entrepreneur to dismiss all of this as bureaucratic red tape. But it's actually the exact opposite. Nailing this data is how you protect the customer experience.
That's the real bottom line.
Because if you feed the automated systems exactly what they need, the package arrives on time. There are no hidden fees demanded at the door, and there are no angry emails from a buyer whose package is being held hostage in an airport cage. Getting the numbers right is how you keep global commerce moving.
Protecting the customer experience through flawless data compliance is the ultimate takeaway here. When a seller is in doubt about how to declare a complex transaction, especially unusual scenarios like high-value commercial returns or complex, multi-part warranty replacements, they should never just guess.
Guessing is the worst strategy.
The guide provides links to the official regulatory handbooks from U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the EU Commission, and the CBSA. Engaging with a qualified, licensed customs broker is always the safest route.
Better safe than sorry.
It is vastly cheaper and faster to pause, verify the regulations, and get the data perfect before the label is printed, rather than shipping a best guess and facing a federal penalty.
It's the ultimate application of the measure twice, cut once philosophy applying to international trade law. And as we wrap up this deep dive into the ClickShip guide, I want to leave you with a final concept to mull over on your own.
A little food for thought.
Yeah. We just dissected the suspension of the $800 duty-free exemption in the U.S. Think about the sheer physical scale of that shift.
It's almost hard to visualize.
Customs authorities, who were already stretched incredibly thin processing freight and high-value goods, are now suddenly flooded with millions upon millions of microtransactions every single week that suddenly require line-by-line scrutiny.
Every single day.
If every single $15 phone case, every $25 t-shirt, and every $80 ceramic mug now requires perfectly verified transaction records, how quickly are customs authorities going to be forced to adopt advanced AI and automated data matching just to prevent global trade from completely grinding to a halt?
They almost have no choice.
The era of a human customs agent manually checking a paper invoice against a computer screen is likely ending faster than any of us realize. So the next time you're browsing online and you finally track down that perfect, hard-to-find item, you click buy, just remember, you aren't just triggering a delivery truck.
You're starting a chain reaction.
You're initiating a highly scrutinized, data-driven international legal transaction. And its success depends entirely on getting the numbers right.